Today's class is the first in a series called Rekha, which means religion, empowerment, knowledge, and action. We're going to have it's a five-part series. The other classes will take place on other legal holidays. This flyer is available. You can find it. It has the topics and whatnot. Encourage your friends' wives, and any men or women that you know to come. It should be an interesting series, and hopefully on the other legal holidays as well, we'll have some learning. Today's topic: views on others' holidays, taking place today, of course, which is Thanksgiving. Now, we're not going to go through all of this stuff in detail, but what we're going to be doing is we're going to look at how history, sociology, and Jewish law impact on contemporary Jewish practices. And the initial idea for this question was, well, today's Thanksgiving, these are all taking place on legal holidays, what is it that is our responsibility or our obligation or our prohibition, perhaps, in terms of observance of these dates? So we're going to do, like I said before, we're going to go through the history, sociology, and Jewish law as it relates to all of these things. So let's start with the history of Thanksgiving. When you think of the history of Thanksgiving, what image comes to your head?
Pilgrims.
Okay. So we're all familiar with the tale of the pilgrims and the Indians. Whatever Thanksgiving meals they had may have been for God's bounty, or to thank the Indians for their help. Nowadays, it's not politically correct to say Indians, but nonetheless, that's what they were originally called.
What do you call
them? Casino owners. or I saw one capitalist idea that said that the reason for Thanksgiving was because they had discovered how to raise productivity through giving each person their own property. Because before then, they said, everyone is for the part of the communion. So Thanksgiving was, look at what we did. Now we have a surplus because we figured out how to properly conduct our capitalist ventures. But maybe there was a Thanksgiving later for having survived a war. There was a war with Indians later on. In the 1640s, the pilgrims came 1620, 1621. There was a war with Indians in the 1640s, in the 1670s, and there was a Thanksgiving idea or Thanksgiving celebration of some kind for that. There are people nowadays in the culture who hate Thanksgiving and who hate Columbus Day because of the other message that each of them bring with it. Okay, it's not just, we're thanks to God that we have this country and thanks to God that Columbus discovered it, but look what happened when Columbus discovered it. Rape, rampage, disease, and destroying the native population that was here. So that is the downside. Yes.
Was Thanksgiving strictly for the gods, whoever they pray to, or was it?
That's what we're talking about. That's right now. We're talking about the history. Okay. So now you have in front of you some of it, but I really want to start from where it says after 1784, because and by the way, there's a ton that you can find on the internet, but I cut things together and put them on here so that you could take it home if you want to go through it and without having to do the search on the internet. Of course, you're more than welcome to, but you have it here. Okay. Thanksgiving as we know it started not 400 some odd years ago or close to 400 years ago. Thanksgiving as we know it started in 1863 with the passage of an edict. Well, actually, it started 150 years after the Mayflower, but as we know, it started in 1863. So if you look at the first source that you have here on page 1, you see how there was no nationwide Thanksgiving until Washington became president in 1789. And at that point, he declared a Thanksgiving Day on October 3rd, 1789. He made the declaration for the November 26th that year, which happened to be a Thursday, as November 26th is this year, the Thursday. And if you could skim through where I put the things in bold, it's a public Thanksgiving prayer. Many, we have grateful hearts, the many and signal favors of the Almighty God. Look at that next phrase, that was, that is, or that will be. Hayah hoveh v'yeh. I mean, he was clearly inspired by a literal reading of the Bible. Our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care. Conclusion of the late war, because the Revolutionary War had been concluded and it had been victorious for the if you want to call them rebel or revolutionary United States, etc. And look towards the bottom to we beseech him to pardon our national and other transgressions, and also to protect and guide all sovereigns and nations, especially such as shown kindness to us. That Washington, in a sense, was a visionary in the way that he viewed what Thanksgiving was all about. It was a thanks for the goodness that God had bestowed upon the people, a thank you for the war and whatnot, but also understanding that there are things which we do which perhaps are not fitting in the eyes of God, but nonetheless, because God has given such great bounty upon this nation and has given us the chance to survive, it's something for which we ought to give thanks. So he declared a Thanksgiving Day. Please take a booklet. He declared a Thanksgiving Day on in that year of 1789. As well, John Adams declared two national days of Thanksgiving. As you can read, James Madison did as well, declare two Thanksgiving days. But all of these days of Thanksgiving were a one-time event. They were never something which was supposed to last beyond that specific year. Okay, and over time, states got into the mood as well. And if you turn the page, you'll see that, just skim through, you'll see just years pocketed throughout there. 1838, 1839, New York State started a regular Thanksgiving celebration, although there was conflict about it, whether the impetus for the Thanksgiving was appropriate or not, in 1817, and it continued throughout the years. And then finally, in 1863, and if you look at the bottom of the left column on page 2, you see how in March 1863, Lincoln proclaimed a day of national humiliation, fasting, and prayer for April 30th. Now, this, is during the Civil War, and Lincoln was making the proclamations that he was making because of the way that the war was going, and to try to preserve as much as possible the Union and the way people were feeling in terms of their national identity and their patriotism. So he, look at the parts which I put in bold, starting with the very last word on the left column. Those nations only are blessed whose God is the Lord, and inasmuch as we know that by his divine law, nations like individuals are subjected to punishments and chastisement in this world. Okay, and he's reflecting over the course of the war. Skip to the next bold. We have been the recipients of the choicest bounties of heaven. We have been preserved these many years in peace and prosperity. We have grown in numbers, wealth, and power as no other nation has ever grown. He was well aware of the historical impact of the United States, even though, as he said shortly after this, or towards the end of this year, it was only 87 years old. Yes. Middle of the page. And I do hereby request all the people to abstain on that day from their ordinary secular pursuits and to unite at their several places of public worship and their respective homes in keeping the day holy to the Lord. It's kind of like a Shabbos Hayom Lashem, in the sense that what he's saying here. But notice how he's not saying it's to any specific religion. He's saying there are all kinds of religions. He was very well aware of the freedoms of religion in this country. He respected it immensely. And he said that we're going to call this a National Day of Humiliation, Fasting, and prayer. Okay, that was the first declaration which he made. The next declaration which he made, and I gave you it in its entirety, is on page 3, which is his proclamation establishing Thanksgiving Day on October 3rd, 1863. And again, you could just skim through you could read the whole thing, or we could skim through the parts which are in bold. Over the ever-watchful providence of the Almighty God, the next part which is in bold, they are the gracious gifts of the Most High God, who, while dealing with us in anger for our sins, hath nevertheless remembered mercy. The Battle of Gettysburg took place shortly after this, which is just kind of ironic, but nonetheless, as a day of thanksgiving and praise to our beneficent Father who dwelleth in heaven, and fervently implore the interposition of the Almighty Hand to heal the wounds of the nation, to restore it as soon as it may be consistent with the divine purpose to the full enjoyment of peace, harmony, tranquility, and union. And he established that a Thanksgiving Day should exist at the end of November, the last Thursday of November, from then and on. Now, Thanksgiving has, we're going to talk more about Thanksgiving, but in essence, that's history. From the time that Abraham Lincoln made the declaration, there was always a Thanksgiving. When Franklin Delano Roosevelt was in office, he changed the Thanksgiving day to a week earlier in order to accommodate for the commercialization of the holiday season. People weren't happy about it, so what he established was that it's the fourth Thursday in November, which is usually the last Thursday in November, unless the first day of November is a Thursday, in which case there will be, I think, five Thursdays. So it will be the fourth Thursday in November, but otherwise it's on the last Thursday in November. That's the history. Okay, let's take a look at another holiday, Christmas. What's the history of Christmas? Now, you think it's pretty easy. What do you think Christmas is all about? I mean, we know it's about now, but what's the history of Christmas? When did Christmas start to be celebrated?
Well before Christianity.
Okay, so it's not Christmas that was celebrated before Christianity. It was the advent of the winter solstice. Okay, and I put the things in bold just so we could skip through along. But it was the winter solstice. The early Europeans marked the year's longest night, the winter solstice, as the beginning of longer days and the rebirth of the sun, etc. In Rome, people celebrated the Rosh festival of Saturnalia from December 17th to December 24th in honor of Saturn, the god of agriculture. Two other Roman festivals, Juvenalia, a feast in honor of Rome's children, and Mithras, a celebration in honor of the infant god Mithra, also fell near the solstice. By the 4th century, the church decided that Christians needed a December holiday to rival solstice celebrations. So they created this Feast of the Nativity on December 25th. Now, what is it supposed to celebrate, the Feast of the Nativity? Anybody?
A baby is born.
A baby is born. But unlike our tradition, which tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu was born on the 7th of Adar, and that he died on the 7th of Adar, guess what? There is no tradition which says when that baby was really born. There is a svara, there is a havamina to say that, no, that there is a thought process that says, well, when is the rebirth solstice? The solstice of rebirth? Come on, springtime. So March 25th or so is the solstice of the spring. And if this child is supposed to have been the rebirth of the world, so to speak, so he must have been conceived at that time. What's 9 months from March 25th? Oh, brilliant. Okay, so you have, in that sense, a date which was created out of nowhere. Continue. So Christmas, next page, page 4, the proximity to Saturnalia resulted in its absorbing some of the Roman festival's excesses, and look at this, decorations were forbidden in time. Some different practices came into being. Guess when the tree was invoked into the holiday? There were trees over time, pockmarks in history, but until the king and queen in England in 1846 introduced a tree to Windsor Castle, it wasn't really, it didn't exist. There was no thought process of it, and it didn't exist in, I'm sorry? If you're coming, are you here for the class? So come on in. This is the class. Come on in. Come on in. There are chairs around and there are packets all around. Come on in. No problem. Come on in.
Is it in your bag?
Yeah. There you go. Okay. And here's a chair. I don't know. Okay. And then only in the 20th century did the focus of this holiday become increasingly commercial. So on this website which I found, which is a really cool website, if you have the patience for it, which is called How Stuff Works, so they divide this holiday, Christmas, into different categories. And then they talk about Christmas gifts. It's about presents. Where do the presents come from? Well, the baby who was supposedly born on that day, again, even in the Christian world, there's a machlokas, there's a debate about when this baby was born. Was he born on the 25th? Or was he born in the springtime? Or was he born sometime else? But they say that the gift-giving tradition has its roots in the three kings' offerings to the infant. In other words, what they call the gift of the, how's it pronounced? The Magi? Magi? Okay, Magi, whatever. Okay. Now, Romans traded gifts during Saturnalia, but gift-giving did not become the central Christmas tradition it is today until the late 18th century. Gifts were meant to remind people of the Magi's offerings, but the practice of gift giving ultimately steered Christmas closer to the secularized holiday that it is today. And you have there the when did the stores have Christmas themed ads? When did Santa Claus come into the equation? When did the when did Macy's start to open all night and whatnot? Ultimately, now Christmas is, I mean, they claim, is a bona fide gift-giving bonanza. That is the end of the history. We're going to get to the sociology soon. Let's take a look at our next holiday, Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day has a clearly Christian origin. Encyclopedia Britannica states, according to legend, again, they don't even know who the Valentine is. There were a number of people, martyrs, who were named Valentine, and who the person who is actually the Saint Valentine is unclear. But according to legend, the priest who was Valentine signed a letter to his jailer's daughter, with whom he had fallen in love, and he wrote, "From your Valentine." The holiday also had origins in the Roman festival Lupercalia, and what did it include? Fertility rites and the pairing off of women with men by lottery. Does that sound like a Jewish custom? Absolutely. Ever hear of Tu B'Av?
Right.
Okay? So I'm not making this stuff up. At the end of the 5th century, Lupercalia was replaced with St. Valentine's Day, and it came to be celebrated as a day of romance from about the 14th century. That's as far as its history. Halloween. We're on page 5. According to the Encyclopedia Britannica, Halloween originated with the pagan Celtic festivals Samhain. The details of the dead were supposed to revisit... I'm sorry, the souls of the dead were supposed to revisit their homes on this day, and the autumnal festival acquired sinister significance with ghosts, witches, hobgoblins, and demons of all kinds said to be roaming about. In the early Middle Ages, the Roman Catholic Church instituted All Hallows' Eve on October 31st and All Saints' Day on November 1st to counteract the occult festival. It did not work. All Hallows' Eve was simply co-opted into the pagan celebration of Samhain. Okay, and there's a clear historical relationship between the Celtic concepts of resurrection, Roman Catholic responses to it, and the modern American holiday of Halloween. So just to sum up, the history of Halloween comes from Celtic and pagan ideas, and what that means today is a question of how much it's relevant, and that we're going to talk about when we get into the sociology, which we're up to right now. We have this, now. No, I didn't mention New Year's. We're going to get into New Year's in a couple of minutes when we talk about the sociology of it. Before we get into the sociology of the other holidays, let's note the words of Thomas Jefferson. And I call it the preamble. That's a play on a word, which is there's a different preamble to the Constitution. But in any case, what did he say? Because remember that Washington and later Lincoln talked about fasting and prayer and humiliation and regret over the things which we have done wrong. He says, fasting and prayer are religious exercises, the enjoining them an act of discipline. Every religious society has a right to determine for itself the times for these exercises and the objects proper for them according to their own particular tenets. And this right can never be safer than in their own hands where the Constitution has deposited it. In other words, let us not tell people how to celebrate religion. You want to say Thanksgiving? Very nice. Leave God out of the equation, Jefferson says. And of course, being a significant founding father of the Constitution and whatnot, his input in this regard is extremely significant. What kinds of traditions have developed sociologically with Thanksgiving? Well, apart from food, the biggest traditions are football and parades. Now, there are those who will argue that football is a religion in and of itself. Okay, granted. We won't go into that debate. I actually once compiled a list of things which are called religions on the internet, and I got many different things, including NASCAR, football, European football, many different things. Some of them were very funny. In any case, other nice things about Thanksgiving, people express their gratitude by giving back to the community, such as in helping out in a soup kitchen or a shelter, and of course, you know, whatever food stuffs which go in with the Thanksgiving dinner meal, those are also part of the tradition. Finally, apparently, the president each year declares Thanksgiving Day Thanksgiving, even though it is set in the book, so to speak, that it's going to be Thanksgiving, but a proclamation is made.
That's what he came up.
Okay? Christmas traditions. See, I'm trying to edit, and that's why I wrote Christmas here. Anyway, they have pre-Christian roots and originate. Okay, so we have pagan winter solstice celebrations or Roman festivals. Some significant holiday traditions include decorations, activities, and food. Well, now, as per our discussion of how Christmas developed over time and the concept of the tree was only introduced in the 1840s, and the concept of decorating the outside of the home, well, when did that start? Anybody? I'll give you a hint. What are most outside decorations Christmas-wise? Electric lights. So when did that start? Or when could that have started only? When? Fine. Late 1800s, okay? And then, but they have to figure out how to do what Edison figured out. It took time to develop. So the concept of electric lights outside is not more than, you know, 110 years old at most. Okay? So, but with tinsel, green trimmings, electric lights, all of this comes from the commercialization of the holiday, which has, in a large sense, changed the holiday from being a religious holiday, a largely religious holiday, into a fundamentally secular holiday. Now, there are traditions which are maintained of the religious nature, right? Schools, churches, well, there's a mass, they'll have a play of some kind, you know, the scene of the nativity and all that to bear it in mind. Apparently that custom started with Francis of Assisi in 1223. And in addition to all that, there are different kinds of foods, which again are part of any tradition. You know, it's like the old saying about Jewish holidays: they tried to kill us, we won. Let's eat. Right. Okay. So anyway, that's it. Without that, they tried to kill us and we won. But let's eat. That's a holiday tradition. And finally, there's a debate as to when Christmas is actually supposed to take place. This was we brought this up around the time of when we were discussing Birchas Hachama last year, because Birchas Hachama and when it takes place has to do with the change from the Julian calendar, which was the old calendar, to the Gregorian calendar, which took place in the, I don't even remember when it was, with Pope Gregory, which is maybe a thousand years ago or so, more than a thousand years ago, I don't remember exactly when it was, but it wasn't adapted, was it the 1600s? No, I think it was 600 or 700s, right. But it wasn't adapted by the Protestant Church until the 1700s, okay, which is a fun thing, by the way, a fun piece of information. Washington's birthday, when is it?
22nd.
The 22nd. When was Washington born? The 11th. Do you know why we celebrate on the 22nd? Because Washington was born before the Protestant Church took over the Gregorian calendar. Taking over the Gregorian calendar from the Julian calendar means that you add 11 days. So what was once February 11th is now February 22nd. What was not once December 25th is now January 6th or 7th. So according to those who never adapted the Gregorian calendar and they're still on the Julian calendar, January 7th is the date that they believe, you know, is when Christmas is supposed to take place.
So that's Xmas Sheni, huh?
Yeah.
That's the Greek Orthodox.
Right, the Greek Orthodox. Yeah, the Greek Orthodox. It's funny. It's funny because in Jewish law, there's a custom to what's called Nitelnacht. Nitelnacht is Christmas evening, not to study Torah on those evenings because it might be a merit for Jesus. So if that's the case, we have a problem, because when is Nitelnacht? Is it the 25th or is it January 6th? So only Jews can have a real machlokas about when Christmas is. Yeah, what?
And why wouldn't we use our calendar for that date? If we don't go by the
No, because that's the day that it's observed.
It doesn't mean anything.
No, it does. It does, because it relates to the solstice. That's what it does. We follow the solstice. Why do we say the Saint Talamata on December 5th? Because we follow the solstice. Okay. In other words, we do take it into consideration. The date of Birchas Hachama is determined by the solstice. It's not determined by. It's not supposed to be Erev Pesach. It depends on the solstice. Okay. Alright, let's continue. We have the traditions of Halloween. The vast majority... Now, this is from an article by Rabbi Michael Broyd, which I gave you the source for on the previous page, I believe, on the bottom, in that little box on the bottom, page 4. He says, the vast majority of people in America who currently celebrate Halloween do not do so out of any sense of religious observance or feeling. And he quotes somebody who talks about it, that his fondest memory of kindergarten was acting as Wilma Flintstone, and hoping that next year that she would be Pebbles, which is Wilma's child. Okay, that MB in there is Michael Broyd, because he's explaining who to his readership who Wilma Flintstone and Pebbles are. They are a cartoon character. Okay, but he and note after the in the middle of where it says Halloween, right after the italics, this statement appears to be a truthful recounting of the modern American celebration of Halloween. Vast majority of people who celebrate Halloween have absolutely no religious motives at all. It is an excuse to collect candy or engage in mischievous behavior. However, it's worth noting that there are still some people who celebrate Halloween religiously, and there are occasional court cases about employees who seek to take religious leave on Halloween day as a religious holiday. Okay.
Halloween is not, the banks aren't closed and stuff like that?
No.
Yeah, they open and give out candy.
Right. Okay, so to get a preview of where we're going to go in our Jewish law section, take a look what he says over here. Okay. Tosfos understands the two distinctly different types of customs are forbidden by the prohibition of imitating Gentile customs in Leviticus 18:3. We'll see this. The first is idolatrous customs, and the second is foolish customs found in the Gentile community, even if their origins are not idolatrous. Okay, apparently foolish, but secular customs are permissible so long as they have a reasonable explanation and are not immodest. Not that I'm looking, but you ever see the ads for the costumes for Halloween? I would say that they certainly fall into the category of immodest, if nothing else. It's not foolish, but in any case. But do they have a reasonable explanation, aside from that it's mischievous behavior and whatnot? The answer is probably no. And therefore, Well, okay, we'll get to our conclusion soon. Rabbi Isserles is thus clearly prohibiting observing customs that have pagan origins, or even which might have pagan origins, and Jewish law forbids a Jew from actually celebrating idolatrous religions events himself. Period. Okay. Now, Rabbi Broid, in his articles on this topic, summarizes everything in the four bold points which I put on the top of page 7. Let's read them. In general, Ramah seems to posit that in order to permit engaging in conduct that might have pagan origins, one must show one of four things to be true. Number one, the debated activity has a secular origin or value. Okay? Two, the conduct the individuals engage in can be rationally explained independent of the Gentile holiday or event. Three, the pagan origins of the holiday are so deeply hidden that they have disappeared, and the celebrations can be attributed to some secular source or reason. And fourth, the activities memorialized are actually consistent with the Jewish tradition, and he concludes that none of these statements are true in relation to Halloween. Okay?
So Halloween is a little one you can't...
Hold on. We'll see. Christmas also. I'm not going to say we can do Christmas. Okay, but anyway, just as a footnote, I was sent this story in an email this year, and I thought it was nice to share just with regard to Halloween, even though Halloween is obviously past. But this is Rabbi Akiva Malas, so I know he's a rabbi in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And he tells a story about how his father-in-law, his wife's older sister, was engaged and was going to be brought, because her father was Rabbi Palm's student. So he wanted them to meet, he wanted the new engaged couple to meet the Rabbi Palm and his wife. And it was October 31st. While everyone else turned on, so in the middle of the thing, everyone else turned off their lights, the Palms left the front light on. While they all chatted with Rav Palm in the dining room, his Rebbetzin was in the kitchen working the hot air popcorn popper, preparing plastic baggies of popcorn to give out with a smile to all the local non-Jewish kids who knocked at their door. They all left the night with numerous smiles, brachos, and best wishes, but what they all remembered most is the powerful lesson the Palms taught them about interacting with their neighbors. So, according to this idea, to share candy is one thing, but what Rabbi Broid is talking about is going out and trick-or-treating. Because that kind of behavior is not in line with the way a Jew is supposed to behave, because of all the points bulleted at the top of the page, which refers to external behavior on Halloween. Yes.
Because you don't want to be the black sheep of the community, but you don't have to go out and collect.
No, he's saying you're not allowed. I mean, he believes
you're not allowed to go collecting, right. But you can't. Segregate yourself from the community.
Correct.
You have to in the community right. Event, but you don't have to.
Right. In other words, if people are coming to your home, why be a jerk? You know, that's in essence what Rav Palm was saying. You know, be friendly, be neighborly, and it doesn't hurt you. Okay, you're not celebrating the holiday right. By giving a child candy. Okay, that I think is what his point is.
You're like
masking to it. Fine. The kid's not Jewish. Now, if the kid's Jewish, you say, "Come in, let me teach you a little Torah." You know, I mean, that's a different discussion. But the point of the matter is to be friendly and to be neighborly.
Well, there's also another reason why you had to participate is because, I mean, to give out the candy mm-hmm. is because they would throw eggs at your house.
Right. So that's practical reason.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, if they're going to throw eggs at your house because you didn't put up a Christmas tree, well, then they're not in the spirit. Then they're not in the spirit of the holiday. Okay. Anyway, Valentine's Day, bottom of page 7. There's no doubting. Sorry. Yes. Question. No, you're not celebrating it.
You're doing something for Halloween.
So you have to take it up with Rav Palm. Unfortunately, he passed away. No, I'm not.
That's why he moved to Harrisburg.
No, but I don't think that what Rav Palm was saying is, I'm celebrating Halloween. Okay, Rav Palm is a tremendous leader in the in the yeshiva community in Brooklyn. He passed away a few years ago. But his point is not that he's celebrating Halloween. It's that he's being friendly and being neighborly. You know, I don't think he put pumpkins in front of his house. I don't think he put skeletons or whatever it was. I don't think. I'm sure. But the point is that this component of their celebration, there's nothing wrong with contributing to it in that way.
You also will create animosity if you don't.
Right. Okay. And we're going to talk about animosity when we get to the Jewish law component. Okay. Next, Valentine's Day. So this is also from a different article by Rabbi Broid, where he says there's no doubt in the Christian origins of Saint Valentine's Day. However, in a quick scan of greeting cards in the store, not a single one of the many cards I looked at made any mention of the Christian origins of the holiday. None of them called it Saint Valentine's Day. They all call it Valentine's Day. And look at the bottom of that column. It's obvious that the status of New Year's Day has changed in the last 300 years. In contemporary America, there is little religious content or expression to New Year's Day. Few would classify it as a religious holiday. And he says, perhaps we can apply the same logic to Valentine's Day. The pious should certainly be strict on the matter of celebrating Valentine's Day, even though the technical halakha permits the observances of, because what are the observances of, as the day has completely lost its religious overtones and can be rationally explained. How can it be rationally explained? Because what is it? It's a day of love, friendship, and candy, each of which is independently explainable. What's wrong with giving somebody flowers? What's wrong with giving somebody candy? What's wrong with giving somebody, I mean, maybe nowadays it's not so healthy if you're on a diet, whatever. What's wrong with giving somebody a card, expressing a love and appreciation for who they are? In other words, each of those are rationally explainable. So if you go back to the four bullet points, for all the holidays, let's do this. For all the holidays which we've talked about, okay? The debated activity has a secular origin or value. Can we say that about Thanksgiving?
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, can we say that about Christmas?
No.
Yeah, probably not. The conduct the individuals engage in can be rationally explained independent of the Gentile holiday or event. Okay, can we say that about Thanksgiving?
Yes.
Absolutely. Oh, I'm sorry, we're supposed to do this for all of these. Okay, so for the first one, has a secular origin or value? We said Thanksgiving, yes. Christmas, no. Okay.
Valentine's Day.
What's the secular origin? What's the value? The value, is it a secular value?
They say thank you. TLC.
Right. In other words, it's romance, it's love, and we talked about how Tu B'Av is not that much different.
Right.
Okay. And Halloween, secular origin or value?
No.
Absolutely not. Okay. And New Year's? Debatable. Next, the conduct. The origin is not. Oh, the origin is bris. Hey, how can you complain about that? Okay, the conduct the individuals engage in can be rationally explained independent of a Gentile holiday or event. Thanksgiving, to give a sudas mitzvah, to give us a meal for saying thank you to God, rationally explained. Yes. Christmas, can it be rationally explained to celebrate the birth of your Lord?
No.
Maybe not. Okay, Halloween, to act like a nutcase and to egg people's homes? No, cannot be rationally explained. Valentine's Day, to give candy to people? Okay. Pagan origins are so deeply hidden that they have disappeared. Thanksgiving, if there were pagan origins, for sure. Christmas? Nope. Halloween? Nope. Valentine's Day? He seems to argue that yes. New Year's? Yes. Yeah. The pagan. They're so. I mean, they've disappeared. Well, how do people celebrate New Year's?
Drinking.
Right. Okay. So that can't be rationally explained. But nonetheless, the religious component of it is completely gone. Okay. What people do.
Most guys on the street don't even know that it's.
Exactly. No. But can it be rationally explained? Yes. Because yesterday was December 31st, and today is January 1st. So I'm celebrating a new year. But it. You know. How's that different than Rosh Hashanah? 5769, not 577. Not that I'm comparing New Year's to Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Finally, the activities memorialized are actually consistent with the Jewish tradition. Thanksgiving?
Yes.
Thanks to God. Christmas? Okay. How? What?
Maybe.
Okay. Halloween?
No.
Valentine's Day, the activities memorialized.
Yeah.
Appreciate your loved one. New Year's? You know, a new year, a new resolution, new, you know, tshuva, whatever it may be.
Right.
Those are things which are Jewish. Now, am I advocating celebrating New Year's? Certainly not in an inappropriate fashion. Is it okay to mark the fact that yesterday was December 31st and today is January 1st? What's the big deal? I don't know. But in any case, am I advocating Valentine's Day? No, but Rabbi Broyd's conclusion at the end of his article on Valentine's Day, and you can look it up, is he says, well, I'm not saying that people should... celebrate Valentine's Day. There's certainly nothing wrong with buying flowers for somebody and candy for somebody and giving a card and expressing love, even not on February 14th. So that's a note to everybody.
Father's Day, Mother's Day.
You do it on the 15th. You say what?
Right, right. So we're going to get to Father's Day and Mother's Day. What?
Do it on the 15th. You say what?
Right. If you do, right. My wife's birthday is the week after February, and she said she always got the best presents because her mom cashed in and coming up with all the great sales. She always got a lot of candy. Anyway. Okay, so now let's turn into the component which is Jewish law. Now, obviously, we're not going to have time to go through all of these, as this class is 45 minutes long, and we have about 11 minutes. But we will take a quick look through all of these things to see what this is all about. Now, by the way, before I do that, there's a Gemara which I didn't mention, and it's a Gemara in Maseches Chulin, and this is Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, who says that the Gentiles who live outside of the land of Israel are not considered idolaters. Rather, The customs of their fathers are in their hands. In other words, they do the things which they do because they saw it in their home, but they don't know the reasons. The reasons are, generally speaking, lost. Now, we can theoretically apply that to all the things which we've talked about, unless it's blatantly clear that they're still celebrating. So if they're going to midnight mass, or if they're going to, you know, some celebration of the nativity, then you say, well, they clearly know what they're doing because it's not lost in them, because it tells them what it is that they're supposed to be doing. Halloween, you can say that the significance has been lost, they don't know why they're doing it, but nonetheless, so in other words, they might not be celebrating a pagan thing, but the pagan rite did exist and it is there, and that is certainly problematic to observe. However, is wearing a costume and acting silly something which is within Jewish tradition?
Yes.
So don't get me started about Purim. Okay? But nonetheless, okay, we do it, but I wonder why. I wonder why, because it's not in there. Oh, and by the way, hold on a second. How about having a tree indoors?
We have trees indoors, yeah.
So if the Christmas tree started in 1846, so look at the Shulchan Aruch, this is the Ramah, in the laws of Pesach, it's the last, it's actually in the laws of Shavuos, says, Ein omrim, here it says, V'noagim l'shtoach asavim b'shavuos v'beis ha-kneses v'abatim zecha l'simchas matan Torah. We have a custom to put greenery in the shul, in the synagogue, and in homes, to commemorate the joy of the giving of the Torah. Okay? So which came first, the chicken or the egg? Most likely the Jewish decoration inside the homes came first, according to Raman, according to what we've discussed about the trees in the...
Not trees, but same concept.
Whatever. I didn't say a tree. I'm not advocating the Hanukkah bush. I'm really not. Okay? But the point is that it's suggestive. And to say
Hanukkah bush thing came from Russia, from something, it's a Russian tradition to Sylvester.
Okay.
The holiday culture, which was right. Not really related.
What?
And Tweety Bird.
Yeah. No, but the tree was introduced by Germans, and it may have made its way into there is a Russian tradition as well, but we don't have time to go into that. Okay, in any case, let's take a look. Jewish law: do not follow the ways of Egypt. I'm going to follow in the English, but you have the Hebrew to show you that I actually did my research, and but it's all here. Do not follow the ways of Egypt where you once lived, nor of Canaan where I will be bringing you. Do not follow any of their customs. That is the key phrase here. Uvuchukosehem lo seilechu. Do not follow any of their customs. Now, some of this stuff we saw before, because I used a lot of Rabbi Broit's analysis, but let's take a look here. Tosfos in Avodah Zarah says, Rabbi Yitzchak explained, there are two kinds of Gentile practices which are forbidden. One which has an idolatrous purpose at its core, and the other is done for some irrational or nonsensical reason. But the question that we ask is, I'm sorry, and the reasons for why those are prohibited is described by the Ran in source number 3. The reason why the idolatrous significance ones are prohibited is because perhaps if you're going to follow the idolatrous significance, you will be drawn to it and you will end up worshipping idolatry. For the nonsensical and the irrational ones, he describes what's called the Darchei Ha-Emori, the ways of the Emorites. If you're going to start acting silly or in an occult-like type of fashion just because that's what they do, then you're liable and culpable for acting in that way. Excuse me. Which is antithetical to Jewish practices. Okay, now the Maharik says, just because it may fall into either of these two categories does not make it completely prohibited. The main problem is if we are specifically trying to be like the Gentiles, or as the term which they usually use, the Ovdei Kochavim, the idolaters, if we're specifically trying to do it. Okay, if he looks about halfway down in the Maharik, he says, all these rules only apply if a person is specifically trying to be like them. But a person need not say, oh, I won't wear X as do the Gentiles. It would be ridiculous to prohibit based on following their ways unless it is clear that the Israelite is trying to be like them, such as through doing something irrational which has no justification except that it is their law. So if you're going to say, oh, no, look, a Gentile or an idolater wears a business suit to work, so therefore I'm not going to wear a business suit. Ridiculous. He's not wearing a business suit to work because it's part of his idolatry. You're not wearing it because you want to be like him. You're doing it because that's what you wear. That's the clothes that's out. That's the clothes which are available. So to say that he does that, therefore I'm not going to, that's ridiculous. That's not what we're talking about. And he gives an example of something which is called a kappa, but we'll get to a better example of what this is referring to in the in the Ramah. Okay, so let's take a look now at source number 5, the Trumas Hadeshen. He says, he talks about New Year's, and he talks about Nitl Nach. Notice that he doesn't use the term Christmas. He talks about Yom Shemini LeNitl. Okay, the eighth day of Nitl, which means eighth day after Christmas, which is New Year's. Okay, and the question was asked, is there cause to be wary of this practice or not? To celebrate, or in his case, he was asked about giving gifts to local priests and government officials. And he says it would be preferred not to send the gift on the actual day, because one of the great teachers also copied such a ruling, to be careful not to send gifts specifically on the day of. Now, however, I've heard that they are very exact about getting things the day afterwards. In fact, their main intention is for the gift to come on the 8th of Nitl, meaning on New Year's, because it is a positive sign for the entire year. Just as we have signs at Rosh Hashanah, right? We should have carrots, so we can have many, many more merits, etc. They also have signs such as getting gifts on this specific day, of course, and of course to distinguish between the Tamei and the Tahor. This is why the day after is best, because the idolatry day is over. In other words, if you're going to be given a gift to somebody who celebrates New Year's in commemoration or in celebration of their holiday, not to give it to them on their day, because what you want to say is, look, I'm giving you a gift in recognition of what you're going through, but I'm not giving it on the day of. You don't say this to them, but I'm not giving it on the day of, because I don't want to look as if I'm celebrating with you. I'm doing it for what's called Darkei Shalom, peace, and I have the word in quotes in the middle, Eva, which is ill will with non-Jewish colleagues, if you're going to not do what they're expecting you to do.
But the
point that the Trumas Hadeshen is making is that New Year's and Christmas and New Year's, you know, however you want to put it, is a religious holiday. Even if you think that things are lost in translation, it's definitely a religious holiday. And from his perspective, he's saying, be wary of any kind of celebration because of that.
Would this apply to the professional world where holiday bonuses are the standard?
Okay, so we're going to get to that at the end. I would say you could definitely take a holiday bonus, no problem. But
the holiday parties.
Right. So we're going to get to that at the very end. Okay. Okay. Now, in sources 6 and 7, we have here two different issues which are raised by Rabbi Klein, who we're going to get to in a little while, of the Ramah. The Ramah talks in number 6 about Gentile. This is 178. He talks about the problems of imitating Gentile customs, and in number 7, he talks about the problems posed by the celebration by Jews of idolatrous holidays. Okay, but look at in source number 6. He talks about customs towards in the last 4 or 5 lines in the English side. He says, however, those customs which are practiced for a reason, such as the physician who wears a special garment to identify him as a doctor, right, a lab coat or whatnot, this can be done. The same is true for any custom done out of honor or any other reason which is permissible. In other words, once the reasoning makes sense, okay, it's to give respect to the doctor, it's to give honor to a professor who wears a special type of cloak, that is fine, because it makes sense. But if it's irrational, you're wearing a goblin costume, you know, what is that all about? It doesn't make any sense. So it's not a sign of respect to do that. So to dress that way on Halloween, for example, it would not be appropriate. And also, one line right above the bold, where the Ramah talks about clothes the idolaters wore specifically for lewd purposes, such as red clothing. There's a law against wearing completely red, the entire body, all red, which is something which is a topic of a different discussion. But in any case, it's something to be aware of. Okay? Yes. Yes. Okay. I'm not going to go through all of these, but in sources 8, 9, 10, and 11, we have different tshuvos, different responsa of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was of the opinion, just to summarize, that that Thanksgiving is a holiday which should not be celebrated, but there's nothing wrong with the particular celebrations. In other words, don't celebrate it because it's Thanksgiving, I'm celebrating Thanksgiving, because he said it's a secular type of holiday. Secular meaning created by non-Jews, even though the specific observances of Thanksgiving are not inappropriate. But he says, if you're going to have it, you want to have a meal, have a meal. You want to have a turkey, have a turkey.
So
Okay, but don't call it Thanksgiving and celebrate with other people, and particularly with non-Jews, because that is not in line with the way we're supposed to conduct ourselves. I don't know if you can read through it yourself. I gave you the Hebrew and the English, so you can read it. Let's skip to page 11. Does that mean that, according to Moshe Feinstein, it would probably mean that? Okay.
For sure, not vice versa.
Okay. I'm showing three different perspectives on Thanksgiving itself, just to bring it full circle. But that would seem to be Rav Moshe's opinion. Okay. Correct. Okay. Look at source number 12. This is Nefesh HaRav. Rabbi Herschel Schachter wrote this book based on the opinions of Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik. It is the opinion of Rabbi Soloveitchik that it is permissible to eat turkey at the end of November on the day of Thanksgiving. We understood that, in his opinion, there was no question that turkey did not lack a tradition of kashrut, and that eating it on Thanksgiving was not a problem of imitating Gentile customs. We also heard that this was the opinion of his father, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik. Okay, so if it's not an issue of imitating Gentile customs, it would seem that according to Rabbi Soloveitchik, if you're allowed to eat with non-Jews in general, which is a topic of a different discussion, okay, but certainly for business reasons and certainly for peace reasons and whatever it may be, and if for whatever reason you're a friend, the reasons for not eating is because, in general, is because it may lead to intermarriage. That's the rule. Okay, now obviously if you're married and your friend is married and you really have no inklings and particular interest in wife swapping or spouse swapping, which is Baruch Hashem a good thing, not to do it, but to not have any interest in it, then we can have the discussion. But in any case, I'm not going to come down as being too liberal today.
Okay.
What?
There's no one at the Suda.
Certainly no one. Okay. And then finally, this Rabbi Yehuda Herschel Henkin has a similar type of approach, okay, in which he links together the 4th of July in America with Thanksgiving, which he says that, you know, there may be people who celebrate these holidays in churches, so there may be an issue, but nonetheless, in general, the specific observances are not a problem. Which leads us to 14 and 15, which is the other approach, which says that it's completely prohibited because it's a secular custom, it's a non-Jewish holiday. There are questions with regard to turkey, and I'm not going to read it, but this is Rabbi Menashe Klein, who is the author of the Mishnah Halachot. Now let's finish up. We have source.
The problem with turkey itself being kosher, like
stuff? Perhaps. Perhaps. Yeah. Perhaps. Okay. Okay. So, I mean, just look at the last italicized line in the translation of 15, which is, thus the spirit of the sages does not approve of one who celebrates, and it is possible that there is a biblical violation. So you see there are three opinions. One is, do it privately in your own and don't call it Thanksgiving. The other one is, who cares, it's Thanksgiving, it's not a big deal, it's a secular holiday, that's the Rabbi Soloveitchik. And this other one, which is based on his analysis, that there's a tremendous problem. The status of New Year's Day has changed in the last 300 years. This is, this is Rabbi Gordon actually gave this to you earlier, so we're not going to read through it again. Okay, take a look at number 17. These are holidays which are even recorded in the Ezra's Torah calendar. Rabbi Feinstein was a member of the Ezra's Torah organization. And so you see Labor Day, Independence Day, Memorial Day, Thanksgiving Day, Columbus Day, Veterans Day, Election Day, President's Day, Memorial Day, fine. Okay, all of these days are days which are completely American holidays and or legal holidays, days off, usually having nothing to do with anything religious. Okay, now, and while, as I mentioned earlier, there may be problems that some people have sociologically with Columbus Day, but all of these days are not problems to observe because they are patriotic or just something to do with the country, which has nothing to do with anything religion, and certainly don't fall into the category, in the negative sense, of any of the four bullet points that Rabbi Broid mentioned before on page, what was it, 7? 7, based on the teachings of the Ramah. With regard to the questions of celebrations or office celebrations and New Year's, so here's a summary on page 12, from Gil Student, who is the author of most of the entries on the Hirurim blog, hirurim.blogspot.com, in which he essentially says that you can read it for yourself, but he essentially says that to go to a party in which they specifically accommodate, for example, not to have any religious overtones or undertones, and to have kosher food, and you're going there not because of a religious reason, but you're going there because of business and because everybody has to be there and because, you know, your bonus is dependent on it and whatnot. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with doing that. Of course, if there's lewd behavior going on, or if there's immodest behavior going on, if there are things which you're uncomfortable with, such as if Santa Claus shows up, or if people are starting to kiss everybody, then you walk out. But that's because you're uncomfortable. But if they're trying to accommodate and to say, look, we want to be respectful to your traditions and where you come from, then it's certainly okay to be there. And there we go. We don't come to conclusions in Rekha. We give you background, so you have all different kinds of opinions. So you can decide whether or not you're going to be having turkey tonight, whether you're going to be watching football, whether you're going to be observing Thanksgiving, or whether you're just going to be having a meal. But nonetheless, as I say always, it is okay to give thanks to God for all the goodness and all the bounty which He has bestowed upon us. And I wish you all a very happy gobble gobble. Thank you very much. Yes, questions?
Let's say you are having a you're having a suda. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, you want to wash for bread. Mm-hmm. Do you wash it the way we do on Shabbos?
No. Lechem Mishnah. No, there's no Lechem
Mishnah. Kiddush first.
No, you never have a Lechem Mishnah. Lechem Mishnah is only Shabbos and Yom Kippur. Always.
Okay.
Always, despite what the caterer will tell you at a wedding.
Isn't it?
No, I'm serious. I once saw a guy, a picture on OnlySimchas.com. It was the funniest thing. The guy was holding a small challah right next to a big challah at his wedding. Like, what is he doing? It looked like he was going to cut the big challah with the small challah. He didn't have a knife. There's no lechem mishnah. Lechem mishnah is only at a wedding. Only Shabbos and Yom Kippur.
Talking about the suda of Purim. Suda of Purim? Yeah.
Yeah, but there's no lechem mishnah. No, you just wash.
Right?
And by the way, a difference between Purim and Halloween is that Purim is mishloach manos, and Halloween is another point to ponder. Yes.
Given all this, I understand that's not necessarily law, but isn't it kind of silly for shuls kedafka not change their hours of tefillah on December 25th, even though people are off? I mean, I know.
So there's a debate about that. If you read Rabbi Boyd's article on Thanksgiving, he talks about it, and he mentions an opinion of Rav David Cohn, who is and of Rav Huttner, who are of the feeling that you should not change the calendar because it's as if you're giving credence to that holiday. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't agree, because I think that if the fact of the matter is that people are off,
yeah,
so don't say it's in honor of Christmas, don't say it's in honor of New Year's, say we're having a later minion.
He says, like, the yard side of somebody. Right.
Okay, whatever, fine. But there's nothing wrong with having an additional minion just because people happen to be off from work.
Why is there practice, going back to the wedding,
That's because it probably goes back to 1940s America, when people didn't know any better. Who makes hamotzi at a thing? You wash, you go make your own hamotzi. You know, once upon a time, people made hamotzi for everybody else.
I don't know about what it's
for. Right, whatever it is. But a hamotzi ceremony for people who are knowledgeable doesn't make any sense. You wash, you make your hamotzi on your own, and you eat the bread that's on your table. Right, exactly. Just make sure that the team that you're rooting for in football wins, so you don't make any curses.
And no piano either.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you all for coming. Hold on, one more thing.
You're talking about Purim with Halloween. The difference is, on Halloween, all the costumes are with skulls and bones and all the...